Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm Spencer Chase. Our guest this week is Senator Roger Marshall, who joins us to assess the lame duck session and the upcoming farm bill. But first, here's this week's headlines. Senate Ag Committee member Raphael Warnock has won his re-election effort and cemented 51-49 Democratic Party control of the Senate. Not only did Democrats grow their majority in the 2022 election cycle, but every Democratic senator also kept their seat in President Joe Biden's first midterm election. It's the first time that's happened since 1934. But Republicans claimed the majority in the House of Representatives, setting up split control of Capitol Hill heading into the 2024 election cycle. The Department of Agriculture rolled out its plans for a contract library to start in 2023. The library will require the nation's beef packers to report contract terms for alternative marketing agreements with producers. USDA's Agricultural Marketing Service will compile the information for a public catalog similar to what is already available in the swine industry. The library will track contract dates, base prices, premiums, and cattle-specific attributes among a handful of other contract terms. The library was one of several ideas on the table earlier this year as lawmakers and beef industry voices engaged in conversations about various pieces of legislation, including bills that would change the way cattle are bought and sold. And finally, the Food and Drug Administration says it will use an outside evaluation released earlier this week to help reform its human food program. The report from the Reagan-Udall Foundation said the lack of strong, defined leadership of the FDA's Human Foods Program has hindered the agency's mission. The report made several recommendations, including having the FDA clearly state its budgetary needs, increase transparency, and elevate the role of nutrition. Representatives of consumer and industry groups, as well as state regulatory officials, said they were pleased with the report and Commissioner Robert Califf's commitment to heed its advice. Kansas Republican Roger Marshall is a member of the Senate Ag Committee, but also serves on the Senate Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee with jurisdiction over the FDA. It's the part of the federal government he says needs a close look.
Well, Spencer, I certainly have always believed food is medicine. And I think that this report just is citing how important nutrition is and a great opportunity to make some bipartisan headway. Right now, we are working with Senator Stabenow specifically on a food as medicine program where we take Medicare age patients that have been hospitalized. And when they go home, we send them nutritious meals. There's some great studies came out actually 4 or 5 years ago showing that those Medicare age patients that were hospitalized go home with a meal plan. Their readmission rate is a fraction of other people. Then we're working with Senator Gillibrand, a Democrat senator from New York. Believe it or not, they have dairies in New York. So we have this commonality of dairy products and milk specifically. There's a whole generation of women that are going to get osteoporosis in their 40s because they weren't drinking milk during school. So we need to make sure we need to get whole milk back into the school system. And then lastly, working with our third Democrat, Senator Booker, on working with teenagers that are pre-diabetic, trying to get them on a better diet as well. So I think that this report gives us strength, gives us science-based fact to say, look, we're not doing our job.
Well, and just continuing on the food as medicine conversation for a bit here, you're one of a handful of folks on Capitol Hill that has practiced medicine at some point or another. And we did see the Department of Agriculture roll out earlier this week as part of the Biden administration's Cancer Moonshot, a plan to kind of bring a bunch of collaboration together. Just from a medical standpoint, what is the potential there of that food as medicine approach?
Well, it's unlimited potential, right? You know, all the time people are asking me, how can we drive the cost of healthcare down? You know, Medicare is on its way to being insolvent in 2028. And probably one of the best solutions is better nutrition. And that's what we need to be working on. We have an epidemic in this country, actually, of diabetes, type 2 diabetes, which is related to diet and a lack of exercise. So I actually believe that nutrition is the key. A healthy nutrition will decrease diabetes. It's going to decrease heart disease. It's going to decrease the number of orthopedic hip replacements and knee replacements as well. So we need to address that in a scientific standpoint. But I think we know the science. And really, a little common sense goes a long way. You know, I, I think back growing up on our family farm, the fresh fruits and vegetables we ate along with the fresh eggs and fresh meat, all those things, that healthy lifestyle. And by the way, we were pretty active as well.
Mm-hmm. Want to talk to you quite a bit about some Ag Committee jurisdiction stuff, the upcoming Farm Bill. But before we do that, want to just quickly check on something here on the lame duck session. We have seen some conversations kind of amplified here this week on a possible deal on a farm labor bill that was passed out of the House of Representatives over the last two sessions of Congress. Have not seen legislation and have not seen action on that in the Senate. Is that something that can happen here in the lame duck session?
Well, Spencer, you talk about a moonshot, and that may be what you're describing right now. Look, the labor issue in Kansas is absolutely the number one long-term economic challenge for our state. There's going to be periods of recession and inflation. Fertilizer prices are going to go up. They're going to go down, the price of wheat up and down. But the common problem we've had for well over a decade is a labor issue. And this is an issue I've worked very hard on since getting to Congress. We had a solution on the floor in my second year up here. But I'm afraid the sides are further apart. I really think this discussion starts with border security. And until we hear conversation out of the White House of saying we're going to secure the border, then I'm just afraid this isn't going to go any further. I would love for it to go further. You know, half of the children I delivered in my last 4 or 5 years in Great Bend, Kansas, were brothers and sisters of DACA recipients. We grew up with those kids. I coached them. They were in my Sunday school class. And of course, they're not kids now. I want to solve the problem. But just in all frankness, we have to secure the border first.
We'll be right back with more from Senator Marshall right after this.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of a space.
Farm Credit helped Rahe build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
At Bayer, we know possibility grows from the seed of a vision. That you can start small and still reach big dreams. That we can nurture the future in our schools to create innovations down the road. That rural communities aren't just farms, but all the people they feed. That's why Bayer partners with farmers to protect those ideas. Because together, we're tending tomorrow's harvest.
Welcome back. Kansas Senator Roger Marshall represents a major beef state in Kansas and has been involved in reform conversations for the industry. One such suggested reform was the creation of a beef cattle contract library. Marshall says even though a pilot for that program will now be functional after the beginning of the year, he still expects broader reform conversations to continue.
We're going to still hear about it, right? The problem is still going to be there. The basic problem is we have four meatpacking corporations that control 80 or 90% of the industry. And part of that reason we have a concentration, by the way, is over regulations. When there's over regulations, smaller industries can't compete. So the conversation is going to continue. We do have a few concerns about the rule that they have issued. We thought this was a pilot program, and now this seems like they're imposing regulations upon everybody. But it is a step in the right direction. I think transparency will be a big help. Meanwhile, our office is going to push to help those smaller packing plants expand. Like one simple issue would be allowing meat to go across state lines. So this week, I'll be feeding all the Republican senators up here minute steaks from my home ranch, the cattle that were growing on our land. And we're having Swiss steak that every Thursday, a different senator brings dinner from their own home. This was one of my favorite dinners that my mom, my grandmother cooked, Swiss steak. And the packing plant I brought this from cannot sell meat across state lines. So that would be one simple solution. We have some labeling issues as well. So this problem's not going anywhere.
Looking ahead to the upcoming Farm Bill, we have a number of issues, obviously, to sort out before something can be sent to the president's desk there. One of them is that a number of agricultural groups, including the National Association of Wheat Growers, calling for an increase to reference prices, calling for additional levels of support in that farm safety net. But the Farm Bill, obviously, in a very tight budget environment. How do you navigate the requests that you're going to get from farm groups for additional support in that safety net and compare that to the lack of additional resources you might be faced with on Capitol Hill?
Yeah, Spencer, that is our challenge. And what I'm asking agriculture to do is to prioritize. Let's figure out what our priorities are and how much money we have to work at. And I think that this is where the local farm bureaus, the wheat association, all these different associations have to come together. So Kansas wheat has to work with Texas cotton. Kansas Farm Bureau, a new president, Joe Newland, Newland, I think is going to do a great job. We need Joe to be speaking to his folks and help prioritizing what that they want as well. You know, a big challenge ahead of us, though, is that this White House has already funded some of their conservation problems through legislation earlier this year. We got to keep our conservation partners in the program as well. It's a challenge. And by the way, what I'm going to really miss is Pat Roberts, Senator Pat Roberts, my hero, steady hand on his on this farm bill process. His fingerprints have been on 8 straight farm bills. We don't need a new radical change. I think there's always opportunity for improvement, but the PLC price point, I think, will be a huge issue for everybody. It's not just wheat. Our producers are just being challenged today by many, many issues, the price of fertilizer, inflation, interest rates, you name it. And now we have increased commodity prices, so that's going to drive up the cost of crop insurance. It's a challenge.
Yeah, a number of challenges. And you mentioned Senator Roberts, obviously the chairman of the Senate Ag Committee when the 2018 Farm Bill was signed into law. But that Farm Bill is one that has a reasonably good approval rating in amongst a number of folks within production agriculture, but headed into a scenario where a new Farm Bill needs to either be passed or the current one extended by the end of September of 23. That the Farm Bill being what it is and being fairly well received, are you necessarily on Capitol Hill going to need to be in a hurry to pass something new in this next year, or will an extension of the 2018 law be sufficient to give you a little bit more time to work on it?
Right. And I just want to tell your listeners, you could probably ask every senator on the Ag Committee, you'd probably get a different opinion. But my opinion is, be careful what you wish for. If we rush through this, the next farm bill may not be as beneficial as this one is. I think the worst thing we could do is rush through this. Not to throw too many stones today, but agriculture has not been a priority for this White House. I think we've really had only 2 hearings, and both very recently, reviewing how the current farm bill is working. I don't hear my producers back home screaming that, oh my gosh, we need to fix something. By this point of the previous farm bill, there are some very specific asks for changes from my folks back home. They wanted to be able to alternate between ARC and PLC. They wanted to use RMA data. We needed some certain conservation changes. So I'm not hearing any radical changes that are necessary. Let's be careful. I'm a physician. I've learned not to rush through the diagnosis part of the workup here.
Mm-hmm. Quickly, before we let you go here, obviously a couple of weeks left in Washington before, really a couple of weeks left everywhere before the end of the year. Wondering anything in particular you specifically will be pushing pretty hard for here as we wrap up this lame duck session?
Well, we want to get our National Defense Authorization Act through. That's how we fund the military. We want to get it through clean. And by the way, we want to make sure that the vaccine mandate is gone. That's going to impact thousands of our soldiers who protect us. And then, of course, we got to fund the government one way or the other. So my goal would be to keep the government open, but I don't want to break the bank and have more of this wealth, more of this interest expense passed on to my grandchildren as well. So those would be the big challenges in front of us going forward. Beyond that, there's not much oxygen left up here.
Mm-hmm. Senator, thanks for joining us.
Good to see you, Spencer.
We'll be right back to hear from this week's panel. But first, we have one election cycle in the books, but our Andrew Hunneke has a look at things we're watching in the one yet to come in this week's Map It Out.
Democrats maintain control of the Senate following the 2022 elections, but keeping control in 2024 might be a tougher task. This map shows the 33 Senate seats that are up for grabs in 2024. 21 seats are held by Democratic senators, 10 are held by Republican senators, and the other 2 are held by independent senators who caucus with the Democrats. 6 of those seats, 4 Democrats and 2 Republicans, belong to current members of the Senate Ag Committee. Democratic members up for re-election include Ag Committee Chair Debbie Stabenow, Ohio Senator Sherrod Brown, Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar, and New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand. Nebraska Republican Senator Deb Fischer is also up for re-election, and the other seat belongs to Indiana Republican Senator Mike Braun, but he says he will be vacating his seat in 2024 to run for governor. some Democratic incumbents could be in for high-profile re-election fights in battleground states, including Montana's John Tester, Wisconsin's Tammy Baldwin, and West Virginia's Joe Manchin. Reporting for AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Hunneke.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we're going to continue our conversation on farm policy and the upcoming Farm Bill with this week's panel. Joined this week by Chandler Gould with the National Association of Wheat Growers, joined as well by Matt Valesco with the Conaway Graves Group, as well as Mary Thomas Hart with the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. Appreciate all of you taking a little bit of time out of your day to join us. And Chandler, I want to go to you first, because earlier this week we had the Georgia runoff. We know a lot more about what Capitol Hill is going to look like next year with that 51-49 split and a very, very narrow majority amongst the House of Representatives. But a question I have for you is, are you anticipating any kind of change amongst the big four of the Ag Committee leadership with, Senator Stabenow and Bozeman and Congressman Thompson and Scott in the House? Any change you're anticipating there aside from, obviously, Republicans taking the majority in the House?
Well, Spencer, as of right now, no, we have not heard of any significant leadership changes in either the Senate or the House Agriculture Committee. Just this morning, news came out that the Republican caucus has definitely elected currently ranking member G.T. Thompson to be the chair of the House Agriculture Committee. Not sure on the timing of the Democrat Steering Committee. In relations to Chairman Scott as they move into the next Congress next year. But overall, I'm not hearing of any rumors of changes in the leadership of either one of those committees.
Mm-hmm. What does this mean when Democrats are going to be switching to the House minority, obviously going to have fewer seats to work with, Chandler? What do you think that's going to mean for overall committee membership and some folks that might actually end up leaving the committee?
Well, having been on the committee when we switched back and forth before, I know what that's like when you're there. Yes, the Democrats will have fewer seats on the committee. That means that they will have to be more selective of who they put on there and what their key priorities were. We saw this year in the last couple of Congresses when the Democrats were in control, we saw more and more members more interested in the SNAP title than a lot of the Farm Bill programs. And so I would encourage the Democrats, as they are looking at that selection process on the House side specifically, to make sure that we've got a good balance of representatives that are interested in farm bills, the rural America, and the other key initiatives that the Ag Committee has jurisdiction over. But we also need that balance there for the SNAP program as well. And so I see that being a major balancing point to make sure that we are not lopsided in interest areas as we move into the next Congress.
Mm-hmm. Well, and obviously the leadership and the membership of the OZAG committee is so important as Congress looks to reauthorize the Farm Bill here coming up this next year. And Matt, that's where I want to bring you in to the fold, because we obviously know that crop insurance has a ton of support amongst farm groups. I think it's usually a priority either 1 or 1A of farm groups is protecting crop insurance heading into the Farm Bill process. But there's also opposition. And I guess I'm curious, how do you, as someone who works on behalf of a lot of different crop insurance organizations on Capitol Hill, how do you expect the opposition to formulate in this particular Farm Bill cycle?
Thanks, Spencer, and thanks for letting me join the panel here today. Really appreciate it. One of the groups we represent is the American Association of Crop Insurers, which represents all facets of the private sector within the crop insurance industry. And the question crop insurance versus ad hoc disaster is one that comes up a lot, and it's come up a lot in history. A lot of people think it's an issue for the crop insurance, but in the past, it really hasn't impacted participation negatively at all. Congress has always sided with the superior product of crop insurance. You look back to 1994 when Congress rejected a permanent disaster aid and essentially put all that money into crop insurance. And the same thing happened in 2000 with the Ag-Risk Production Act. So I expect much of the same this time around in terms of Congress putting their support again behind the superior product, which we see as crop insurance. It's more flexible, it's more timely in getting that support to producers. So we are going to have opponents, but I think, you know, history goes to show that Congress and their staff understand how critical crop insurance is and how well it's worked for producers over the years, which goes to show why Congress continues to throw their support behind crop insurance as opposed to some of these other ad hoc disaster programs that we've seen in, you know, since 2017.
Mm-hmm. Well, and another area that we were looking at potentially having some conversations into the upcoming farm bill, we still might, is in the area of livestock policy and particularly some beef cattle pricing reforms. And one of the ideas that has kind of been bantied about in this process was the creation of a beef cattle contract library. And that's something we saw take place here this week. USDA rolled out the pilot program. And so, Mary Thomas, as NCBA was looking over this issue and working with USDA to formulate this pilot program, I guess what were the concerns that NCBA had legally, you know, from a legal standpoint, because obviously we're dealing with very sensitive data, very sensitive information. What were the concerns NCBA had legally about the formation of this pilot and, frankly, the functionality of it going forward?
Great question, Spencer. And, you know, I think you really kind of answered your own question as you were asking it, making sure that location data, that our producers' data is kept private, is at the top of our list of concerns, right? And we were supportive of the contract library. We appreciate transparency in that way. But, you know, I think at the end of the day, our producers are incredibly cautious about making sure that they're able to keep their information safe. So we really appreciate USDA's effort to kind of balance on that tightrope of, you know, providing transparency while simultaneously ensuring that our producers stay safe.
We'll be right back with more from our panel right after this.
Looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
Welcome back. Many in farm policy are expecting a debate in the next farm bill over whether or not to create a permanent disaster program rather than passing ad hoc legislation at the time of need. Matt Valesco with Conaway Graves Group says it's an issue that Congress will need to study carefully.
You know, I think standing disaster, you know, GT said it back early on this year, you know, it's got to be quickly delivered to the producers and it can't undermine crop insurance in any way, which I think is critical. You know, it's hard to say what kind of impact any sort of program like that would have on the crop insurance program until we know exactly what it looks like. So, you know, it's hard for me to say one way or the other what that impact would be. But some things for Congress to think about, if we look back at some of these ad hoc disaster programs since 2017, you know, some sort of standing disaster program would likely cost $3 to $5 billion annually with the amount of money that it would entail. And if you look at the 10-year budget window for a farm bill, you know, you're looking at $30 to $50 billion over the course of that farm bill in a 10-year period. You know, we continuously talk about potential new money, but that's something to think about is the overall cost of this and how you really get the funds to do that. So I think that's one big piece that we need to be thinking about here is the overall cost of what that would look like.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've talked a lot about the farm bill. Let's finish up our conversation on a couple of other issues. And Chandler, that's where I'll bring you in. The nation's farm groups have been, you know, unanimous might be pushing it, but almost unanimous in their calls for the Senate to confirm a pair of key nominees, Doug McCaleb at USTR, Alexis Taylor at USDA. Haven't seen that action from the Senate side of Capitol Hill quite yet. In your estimation, what is the prospects for their confirmation here in the lame duck session?
Well, I know that both Chairwoman Stabenow and Ranking Member Bozeman are working tirelessly on both of their parties to get these two very important positions filled. I mean, specifically for wheat, we export 50% of our wheat, and not having a chief negotiator at USTR and not having our Undersecretary of Trade at the USDA is really muffling the voice of agriculture in this administration as we continue to look at existing trade problems for wheat. We have a major issue with India and their domestic support system, but then also looking at additional FTAs and market access that we could be granted. And so I was just on a call earlier today with a bunch of other CEOs to encourage the Senate to please move these two nominees forward so that we can continue to keep our top place in the international markets in agriculture.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Mary Thomas, wrapping up the conversation with you here today, and I can't believe I'm about to say what I am about to say, but it seems as if we haven't heard about WOTUS for a while. That's an issue that has been top of mind for a number of folks, and publicly at least, we're expecting the EPA to roll something out here at some point soon, but they've been keeping their cards pretty close to the vest on what that will be and when it will be. What is NCBA anticipating in terms of timeline and content on this upcoming WOTUS rollout from the Environmental Protection Agency?
You're right, Spencer. It's been a pretty quiet year on the WOTUS front, but that all changed in October when the Supreme Court heard oral arguments in Sackett versus EPA. It was actually the first case of the 2022 term, and that was the Supreme Court's fourth attempt to consider the definition of WOTUS. Meanwhile, we have the Biden administration, as you said, prepared to finalize its regulatory definition of WOTUS. We expect that final rule probably in the next 10 days. So we could definitely get into some territory early next year where we have competing standards from the Supreme Court and the Biden administration. And we have to kind of figure out how those two are going to work together. Obviously, NCBA was concerned with the proposed Biden rule. I think most particularly, we were worried about the loss of those really important agricultural exemptions for stock ponds, prior converted croplands, including a definition for prior converted croplands and farm ditches. So we'll be keeping an eye out for that in the final rule.
So something that you say is expected here in the next 10 days, we're all going to be finishing out our year with a little bit more WOTUS fun, you think?
Yeah, I think 2023 is going to be a big year for WOTUS.
Very, very good. Well, obviously, 23 going to be a big year for WOTUS, as you mentioned, a big year for a number of other issues, including the nation's trade agenda, the upcoming farm bill, a number of things for us to keep our eye on. And we appreciate all of you stopping by to fill us in on what that will mean for your particular organizations. Thanks for joining us. We'll be right back with more AgriPulse Newsmakers. But first, our Andrew Hunneke has a look at soybean crush capacity that could be coming online in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
New data from the American Soybean Association shows big growth is on the way for the industry's crush capacity. This chart shows the expected changes in U.S. soybean crushing capacity through 2026. As you can see, the U.S. is currently crushing a little more than 2.2 billion bushels of soybeans per year. That number is anticipated to rise to nearly 3 billion bushels by 2026. The projected growth is attributed to multiple factors, but perhaps the biggest is the demand for renewable diesel. Soybean oil is a major feedstock for renewable diesel, and there's more projected demand for the product. The number of soybeans that need to be crushed will continue to grow if the renewable diesel and biofuel industries keep growing. 23 soybean crushing plant expansions have been announced so far, which is expected to increase crush capacity by 34%. 13 of those plants are new, while 10 are expansions of current plants. Two have already been completed. Up to 530,000 bushels of soybeans are projected to be crushed daily through 2025. That number is expected to rise to 800,000 by 2026. You can read more about the expansion and what it means for biofuel production in our story from Noah Wicks on AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Hunneke.
Agriculture Future of America is a nonprofit building transformational leaders in food and agriculture. AFA prepares college students to join the workforce as innovative and engaged young professionals who will shape the future of agriculture. Head to agfuture.org to find out how you can get involved.
Did you know AgriPulse has all your favorite podcasts, including Open Mic, Newsmakers, and Drive Time? Take us wherever you go. Subscribe at agripulse.com or on Spotify, Google Play, or Apple Podcasts.
Thanks again for tuning in for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon for the upcoming week. We'll be keeping our eye on the latest version of the Consumer Price Index that's going to be released on Tuesday. USDA will also be releasing multiple reports, including its annual report on organic production. And finally, lawmakers must either agree to an omnibus or a continuing resolution before Friday's government funding deadline. Absent either action, the government will shut down. AgriPulse.com is your best bet for the latest on this and all the other farm policy news you need. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Spencer Chase. Have a good one. Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. For more ag policy news, visit AgriPulse.com. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more.